You're listening to local and regional news on KMUN. I'm Ava Berardi. Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality issued $3.2 million in fines last week against three Pacific Seafood processing plants. The fines are all for water pollution violations, with the largest fine going to a site in Charleston, near Coos County. It was fined for not installing a water waste treatment system. Aaron Saylor is with the Office of Compliance and Enforcement at DEQ.
DEQ remains committed and willing to work with the company, but it's time to see some action on their part towards installing the treatment necessary to control the pollution they discharge to Oregon's waters.
But officials at Pacific Seafood see things differently. They say the fines landed just weeks after the company raised serious concerns about DEQ, and they accuse the agency of attacking the seafood industry. Pacific Seafood has 20 days to appeal. More than 33,000 Oregonians have lost federal food benefits since the implementation of the One Big Beautiful Bill. KLCC's Zach Ziegler reports that the state is offering guidance for those seeking to get their SNAP benefits back.
The Oregon Department of Health Services says people who are not exempt from new work rules have likely burned through the 3 months of assistance they're eligible for and are seeing an end to benefits. But State SNAP Director Jessica Amaya Hoffman says people who have lost their benefits can get them reinstated.
Oh my gosh, please call us. We encourage everyone to call us if they have work rules and they're not meeting those work rules. We can help you get connected with job services. We can talk to you about potential exemptions.
Those exemptions range from medical or addiction treatment to being a parent or legal guardian of a young child. I'm Zach Ziegler reporting.
You're listening to KMUN. I'm Katie Frankowitz. President Donald Trump is allowing the U.S. Air Force to pollute rivers and lakes in Oregon, Idaho, and Nevada so pilots can train in combat jets in the Owyhee Desert. OPB's April Ehrlich has more.
President Donald Trump has declared the military's supersonic flights are in the paramount interest of the country, even if they pollute rivers and threaten fish. He didn't explain why this training is important, but his declaration comes 2 months into the war that the U.S. and Israel launched against Iran. Air Force jets have been flying at the speed of sound over the Owyhee Desert, causing thunderous booms. These fighter jets also drop flares and clouds of aluminum-coated fibers called chaff, which can throw off missiles. 3 years ago, environmental groups sued the Air Force, saying its flares and chaff release toxic metals that harm native fish. Trump's declaration allows the flights to continue over this high desert, even if the jets violate federal and local water pollution laws. Few other presidents have made similar water pollution exemptions in the name of national interest. I'm April Ehrlich, reporting.
For years, Oregon has ranked near the bottom when it comes to instructional time for kids in school. Now, a new report by the Education Reform Group, Stand for Children Oregon, and research group Eco Northwest paints a clearer picture of the gaps in school days among the state's 197 school districts. Depending on where they go to school, elementary students may see as much as an 8-week difference in the length of the academic year. Sarah Pope is the executive director of Stand for Children Oregon. She says the state has set a, quote, very low floor for time in school and allows broad flexibility in how districts meet it. Even the Oregon Elementary School with the longest school year comes in below the national average of 180 days. Studies have shown extended learning time can lead to improved academic outcomes, especially when bundled with reforms to enhance instructional quality. Earlier this month, Governor Tina Kotek issued an executive order forbidding school districts from cutting school days to balance declining budgets. State Representative April Dobson, a Democrat from Happy Valley, says she and her colleagues intend to introduce a bill that would set the floor for Oregon's school year at 180 days, the same as Washington State's. This story comes to us through a news partnership with the Oregon Journalism Project and was reported by Kushbu Rathor. The Oregon State Marine Board voted last week to accept public comment on a temporary rule that limits the use of motorized boats in the Upper Siletz River. KLCC's Brian Bayhuth reports.
The Confederated Tribes of Siletz Indians petitioned the Oregon State Marine Board to prohibit motorized boats upriver from Jack Morgan Park on the Siletz River to protect salmonid spawning areas and prevent user conflicts. The Marine Board voted to continue to allow the use of motorized boats with less than 10 horsepower upstream from Jack Morgan Park, but prohibit motorized boats upriver from Old Mill Park, 9 miles upstream from Jack Morgan. Angela Sondana is the tribe's natural resources director.
We are disappointed that they did not select the alternative that was most protective of the river, but we will continue to engage in the process.
The Marine Board directed staff to organize 2 public meetings and a board work session to more fully consider public comment ahead of a possible vote on a final rule at the board's July meeting. In Newport, I'm Brian Bayhuth reporting.
The campus social scene sees many students ready to party hardy with alcohol. New University of Oregon research says besides those harsh hangovers, heavy drinking impairs one's cognitive functions the day after, too. KLCC's Brian Bolt reports.
More than 300 college kids were observed over a 3-week period. They were tracked by levels of drinking, including some who blacked out, followed by day-after brain functions such as decision-making, attention, and memory. Ashley Linden Carmichael is an associate professor in the Department of Counseling Psychology and Human Services in the UO College of Education. She sums up the findings with the heavier drinkers.
They had a harder time with making decisions. They had poor memory, overall poor cognitive functioning. And we saw that this was especially true on days where they blacked out after alcohol use as well.
Linden Carmichael says many students think everything's back to normal once they sober up. But these cognitive mishaps can affect their studies, work, and relationships, so these findings might help them make better decisions about substance use. I'm Brian Bull, reporting in Eugene.
Bridge closures around Young's Bay in the Astoria and Warrenton areas begin this week. The Oregon Department of Transportation is inspecting both the new Young's Bay Bridge on US 101 and the old Young's Bay Bridge and Lewis and Clark River Bridge on US 101 business. There will be nighttime closure tonight on the US 101 New Young's Bay Bridge beginning at 8 p.m. The bridge will reopen at 6 a.m. Tuesday. US 101 Lewis and Clark River Bridge will have a nighttime closure starting at 7 p.m. Tuesday and will reopen the next day at 6 a.m. The Old Young's Bay Bridge will have a full nighttime closure 2 nights in a row, on Wednesday and Thursday from 7 p.m. to 6 a.m.
You're listening to KMUN News, turning now to stories out of Washington. About 6 in 10 of all U.S. apples are grown in Washington state, but a highly destructive bacterial disease called fire blight is threatening orchards there, and researchers say it's becoming resistant to antibiotics.
Microbes are becoming extensively resistant to our standard antibiotics. It's making it harder to treat people that get infections in hospitals.
That's Cynthia Hazeltine. She's a microbiologist and an associate professor at Washington State University. She says researchers believed they could use these microbes for good. They found a compound derived from one that is promising in treating fire blight. Researchers are now spraying it on apple trees to see if it can protect them in the real world.
A teacher at Southwest Washington's Battleground High School was suspended 8 months ago for what she said at a politically charged time. The social studies teacher is still trying to be allowed back in the classroom. As OPB's Eric Newman reports, the conflict demonstrates the difficulties teachers face when it comes to social media and political controversy.
The incident for Battleground High School social studies teacher Amanda Gonzalez started on September 10th. It was the same day that conservative activist Charlie Kirk was shot during a speaking event outside Salt Lake City. Gonzalez remembers it was in between class periods. A student came up and asked if she had heard about Kirk's death.
I was just like, he's not my political cup of tea, and moved back to, let's end this, move on.
The student's account was different. In a text message to his mom, he wrote, quote, Ms. Gonzalez was laughing about it, saying she had no sympathy for Nazis. His mom shared a screenshot of the text on social media. From there, it went viral. A few hours later, the district put Gonzalez on paid administrative leave. She's been there for the past 8 months. She says it feels like the situation burned her life to the ground.
It's impacted my children. It's impacted my parents. You know, my parents now have video cameras on their home because their address was leaked online. I look out the window, and if I see a car across the street for too long, I start to panic.
In a report outlining why Gonzalez was being discharged, Superintendent Sherry Witten wrote that multiple students alleged the teacher had a political bias, and it was having a negative impact on the district. Quote, "The district finds the students credible," Witten wrote. Officials with Battleground Public Schools declined to comment. Then, in January, a retired Washington State Superior Court judge weighed in. She'd been hired as a third-party arbitrator. In her report, the arbitrator wrote that the allegation against Gonzalez was not credible, and the opinion she'd expressed was not egregious. Gonzalez should get her job back, the arbitrator recommended, along with attorney's fees and back pay. But the district hasn't allowed Gonzalez to return to class, and that lack of support has left some teachers feeling unprotected. Just after the incident with Gonzalez, English teacher Jordan Johnston was teaching the 1953 Arthur Miller play The Crucible. It tells the story of the mass hysteria of the Salem witch trials. It's an allegory for the Red Scare and McCarthyism in the 1950s.
Part of what happens in The Crucible is that you have these young teenagers making up just outright lies about the adults in the town.
Johnston remembers leaving her classroom when an administrator pulled her aside.
She said, "I just wanted to let you know that another teacher overheard some students bring up your name as possibly being a really liberal teacher and that maybe they could get you to say something to get you in trouble and maybe get you fired."
The next minute, she had to step into her classroom and teach The Crucible, a play about false accusations and reputations being ruined. Some other teachers at the school feel the same chilling effect. Joseph Drury is a math teacher at Battleground High School.
We're all just kind of walking on eggshells, it feels like.
Shauna Walter's son is the high school student whose text messages sparked the investigation into Gonzalez. She declined an interview request, but wrote that she doesn't think the teacher should get her job back. Quote, "We were assured multiple times that the district did not base their pursuit of termination solely on the testimony of my son, rather from the mountain of evidence from multiple sources," end quote. Nearby districts have dealt with other social media conflicts recently. Ben Folgers is an English language arts teacher in Des Moines, Washington, and a union representative for the Washington Education Association. He says a school cell phone ban in Washington State would be one small way to prevent the kinds of incidents like Gonzalez's in Battleground.
Teenagers are teenagers. They're not fully like thinking about the consequences of what that kind of accusation can have.
While Oregon and many other states have laws prohibiting the use of personal electronic devices during the school day, Washington has no such rule. At this point, Gonzalez has a few options. The district has made multiple settlement offers, but she says none have been enough to make up for her potential lost retirement savings and medical coverage. Now, after 8 months, she and her lawyer are giving the district until Monday to reinstate her, or they say they'll take the issue to Clark County Superior Court. I'm Eric Newman reporting.
Local and regional news on KMUN is brought to you by our news partners and by the KMUN News Department. That includes host and production assistant Ava Berardi and me, news director Katie Frankowitz. If you have a news tip or story idea, email us at news1@kmun.org. That's news, the numeral 1, at kmun.org. You can also call us during regular business hours at 503-325-0010. If you have anything you'd like to say generally about the programming on KMUN, email feedback@kmun.org. That's feedback@kmun.org. The American Democracy Minute is coming up next on KMUN with an episode all about the Safeguard American Voter Eligibility Act, or Save America Act. This would require people to have photo identification in order to cast a ballot and would largely eliminate mail-in voting. Voting rights advocates and Democratic lawmakers worry that this, coupled with other efforts by the Trump administration, could disenfranchise millions of citizens and create significant burdens and higher costs for state and local governments. With Oregon's May 19th primary coming up, this seems like a good time to remind you that KMUN attended a recent candidates forum in Astoria. We recorded audio of the event and also recorded video. Both are available to you at KMUN.org. Later this week, we'll also have an election resources page available to you at KMUN.org that will give you a quick rundown of information in your county as we count down the days to Oregon's May 19th primary. Thanks for listening. This is KMUN.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. For now, the GOP's restrictive Save America Act has stalled in the U.S. Senate, blocked by the filibuster. An attempt to attach it to a budget reconciliation bill needing only 50 votes to pass also failed. Is it dead? After the two-week recess, Senate Majority Leader John Thune was unable to strong-arm the votes for a second effort to pass the bill, which overrides state election rulemaking by implementing federal election standards. It requires photo ID to vote, but allows only a narrow range of IDs. It requires proof of citizenship, to which many Americans don't have ready access, and it would eliminate universal mail-in voting. Such requirements create barriers for married women, the elderly, the disabled, shift workers, and rural voters. The bill passed the House 2018 to 2013 in February, but failed in the Senate 53-47 March 26th, not reaching the 60-vote threshold to end the filibuster. An attempt to slip portions of it into a budget reconciliation package failed, blocked by GOP Senators Susan Collins, Lisa Murkowski, Tom Tillis, and Mitch McConnell. Saturday, President Trump resumed his calls to, quote, terminate the filibuster by changing Senate rules, the so-called nuclear option. While not dead, the Save America Act appears to be on life support. We have many resources on the Save Act at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.